Welcome, everyone. I'm Laura Hoffman, Knowledge Management Specialist here at Hagerty. We are happy to have Harvest Plus with us today. And before I turn it over, we're just going to go over a couple of process notes. The first one being, please go ahead and post questions to the presenters throughout their presentation. And we'll go ahead and facilitate those questions during the Q&A session at the end. And if you have any tech issues, please have a private chat with the Agilent in Trinidad, sorry, AV Tech, who will go ahead and help you to start a private chat by hovering over their name and clicking on Start Private Chat. Now I'm going to go ahead and turn it right over to Diane DiBernardo, the Nutrition Advisor with USAID Bureau for Food Security, to get us kicked off.
Good morning, everybody. Harvest Plus is a non-profit agricultural research program coordinated by the International Center for Agricultural Research Institute and the Center for International Center for Tropical Agriculture. Harvest Plus is based in Washington, D.C. and has country offices in Africa, South Asia, and research partnerships throughout the world. Biodiversification has progressed from research to the delivery phase with USAID support. USAID has been an important partner to the organization's earlier years, and Harvest Plus today is the U.S. Department of Health and Human Orange Soup Care Program in Uganda, and Vitamin A in Uganda. Close to 10 million people in North Africa, Africa, Asia, and Latin America are growing and eating these and other biofortified foods. Harvest Plus' goal is to scale up worldwide, working with a broad array of partners globally. Dr. Howard Cadden-Willis has been a director of Harvest Plus since 2002. He advocates widely for improving nutrition through food-based approaches and has worked with India, China, and Brazil to promote natural biofortification programs. Dr. Willis has a joint appointment with ISTE in Washington, D.C., and the International Center for Tropical Agriculture in Colombia. He received a BA in economics from Stanford University and a permanent PhD from Stanford Food Health Research Institute. He joined ISTE in 1982 as a postdoctoral scholar on the Food Consumption and Nutrition Division, where he later held positions as a research scholar and senior research scholar. His research is focused on how economic factors affect food demand and nutrition outcomes, particularly in Brazil. Dr. Anna Marie Ball is a native of Canada, but grew up in Zambia and has spent most of her career in Africa, working on projects involving disease management, immunization, community health, agriculture, and nutrition. Dr. Ball is teaching PhD from the University of Manitoba and Community Health Sciences, her master's in international rural development from the University of Guelph, and a doctorate of science in biology from Queen's University of Canada. She joined Harvest Plus in 2006, where she began working on research and research projects which targeted the delivery and evaluation of high vitamin A and soup care in Uganda and Mozambique. This project, supported by USAID and other donors, demonstrated that farmers were willing to adopt corn soup potato and additional vitamin A had clear nutritional benefits for women and children. Dr. Ball then served as manager of Harvest Plus Cancer Program in Uganda, and now with Harvest Plus advocacy and partnership efforts throughout Africa. During today's presentation, we will discuss biofortification efficacy levels.
Okay, thank you, Diana, and we're very appreciative of USAID hosting this webinar today, and thank you to everyone in the audience for taking the time to learn about biofortification, to discuss biofortification. So, let me start with the evidence that we generated. I think my message here today is that biofortification works. Harvest Plus got started in 2003. We're now 12 years into the program. In 2003, we didn't know biofortification would work, but now we have the evidence. The first issue that we needed to deal with was to breed high levels of minerals and vitamins into high-yielding backgrounds. We knew that farmers would not adopt crops that were lower yielding, that had lower profits, just because they were more nutritious. So one of the central tenets of the biofortification strategy of Harvest Plus is that our crops have to be just as high yielding, just as profitable as other crops that farmers are growing. Then the value proposition that we offer to farmers is you get the same yield, but you also get the higher levels of minerals and vitamins, which I'll be discussing later. So we in the slides that I will show after this, we have now releases of high-level crops in many countries around the world. So we've proven that we can breed mineral and vitamin density into high-level crops. That's the first very important piece of evidence that we've generated under Harvest Plus. The next issue is the nutritional efficacy. Once we spread the minerals and vitamins into the crops, we have to show that when people who are deficient consume them, that their mineral and vitamin status improves. So Harvest Plus has commissioned 14 efficacy trials for various crops around the world. And now most of that evidence is in. We've conducted for high iron, for iron deficiency, we've conducted studies for high iron beans, for high iron formulas. Also, there was one with high iron rice, where we've shown improved iron status. And in fact, our principal investigators from Cornell University have now done a meta-analysis of the various studies, which was presented at the Mike Einstein Forum in August last June, showing that the iron biofortified crops are efficacious. So we're pretty much finished with the iron. The story is very similar to the vitamin A. We've had efficacy trials for sweet potato for many years. It was published many years ago. Recently, we now have studies for hypovitamin A maize, hypovitamin A cassava that are in the journals, and we have the evidence. There's still two more trials out in the field, but we haven't done a meta-analysis. For the high zinc crops, we've done bioavailability studies. The bioavailability is high, but the efficacy trials are still in the field. We have three studies that are ongoing in India. There's high-zinc wheat, high-zinc pearl millet, and a study will begin on the high-zinc rice in Bangladesh later this year. So we have a lot of evidence now on the nutritional efficacy of the biofortified crop. And the next piece of evidence is scaling up. We have to show that farmers will adopt the crop, and that people will eat them, and that we have a public health impact. We've started on the delivery. We've been working on the delivery now for 3 or 4 years. We have a lot of positive evidence. We have a lot of momentum for the scaling up. More than 2 million farm households have directly received the biofortified crops now. And I'll be discussing some of the evidence from those slides on the scaling up. We know that biofortification is cost effective. The main power of biofortification is that we use agricultural research. You do the research in a central location. We develop the varieties. Those varieties are made available to agricultural research institutions around the world. They're adapted to local growing conditions. They're more available in the food supply year after year after year. Most of your costs are in the original development. And then once they're in the food system, you don't have the current cost if you do with other types of interventions. That's the power of biofortification. So that's a brief summary of the evidence that we've developed. So I wanted to make a point that USAID has been involved with us with Harvest Plus and biofortification from the start. We actually got our first grant to look into the feasibility of undertaking biofortification in 1993 from USAID. With that funding, we were able to identify a set of plant leaders within the CGIAR system who were interested in pursuing the strategy. It did take 10 years to develop a critical amount of funding so that we could start down the plant breeding road, start developing the breeding pipeline. But we did that. We got that funding in 2003. USAID has been a significant supporter during that time. And then we got our first releases in 2011, 2012. And now the missions, the USAID missions in the countries where we're delivering the crops are supporting the delivery of biofortified crops. Our whole operation in Uganda with orange sweet potato and high iron beans, supported by the USA Mission. The USA Mission is the Anglican Center that supported the denomination of one man. And we're talking to other missions, and we hope we have some other missions supporting us in the future. These are the target countries where Harvest Plus is focused on scaling up. So when we go through the countries a bit and the crops that we're working on. So in Africa, let's start in Africa. You can see that Uganda, we're working on the high provitamin A sweet potato and reducing high iron beans. In Rwanda, we're focused on the dissemination of high iron beans. Let me emphasize that the beans in Rwanda are even higher yielding than the normal bean varieties that bean farmers are growing now in Rwanda. In Zambia, I mentioned high provitamin A maize. That's our focus crop there. In the Congo, we're working on two crops, high provitamin A cassava and high iron beans. And in Nigeria, we're focused on provitamin A cassava, but we've also released orange maize, high provitamin A maize, and we're starting a dissemination program on that as well. So those are our target countries in Africa. We haven't colored Ethiopia green, but we're intending to open an office in Ethiopia later this year or at the beginning of next year. And our initial crop that we'll be working on in Ethiopia is the orange maize, high provitamin A maize. Moving over to South Asia, in India, we're working on high iron pro millet. High iron pro millet was released in 2012. High zinc wheat is out in India, and the high zinc rice will be released next year in India. In Bangladesh, we have high zinc wheat. It was released 2 years ago. We're starting a dissemination program. And in Pakistan, we have high zinc wheat, and those varieties will be released this year in Pakistan. So these are target countries. We have country managers. We have dissemination strategies that we're implementing. We're raising funding to work with collaborators to realize the scale up in those countries. Then all of the other countries we consider as partnership countries. And how we're going to get bio-fortified crops out in the partnership countries, I'll be discussing in subsequent slides. So this is a map of all the countries where biofortified crops have been released or are being tested. So you can see it's a global program. We now have biofortified crops released in 25 countries, and we're doing multi-location testing in 43 countries around the world. Just on a somewhat technical note, to get a crop released in a country, we work with the National Agricultural Research Institute. Candidate varieties undergo multi-location testing, so they can pick varieties that grow well in several different regions. Once those varieties are identified, they're submitted to varietal release committees to test the agronomic properties of the crops, test that they meet the minimum agronomic standards. And after usually 2 years of testing, once it's proven that they meet these agronomic standards, then they're released and we're allowed to multiply the seeds and sell them to farmers. So we've gone through that process now in 25 countries with biofortified crops. And there are 42 countries where they're in multi-location testing. I want to point out three major countries where we want those countries with major scientific programs to get working on their own biofortified programs. So I think the prime example is Brazil, the Embrapa, which has a huge agricultural research system, has its own biofortification program that's supported by Embrapa. They're working on 9 biofortified crops. I think they've released 5 different types of biofortified crops. And they're taking regional leadership in Latin America. There's the Harvest Plus China program. I'll be in Beijing at the end of June, beginning of July. There's a conference on listening and teaching in agriculture that's sponsored by the central Chinese government. They're going to be announcing that fire fortification will be part of the next 5-year plan, and they're deciding now what the program will be and what their investments will be in fire fortification. Then the third major country that we want to take regional leadership is India. And we're working very closely with the Indian government on bio certification and have been working with them for the past 10 years. So this is, this is a global program. I'm an economist, and one of the reasons that I stayed focused on bioforestation, I've worked on it for 20 years now, is that it is so cost-effective. A group of economists called the Copenhagen Consensus, which includes 5 Nobel laureate winners in economics, they were asked to identify the 20 most productive investments that could be made in developing countries. And about 4 years ago, they came out with a report. They identified within the top 5, they identified 3 interventions that focused on micronutrient malnutrition, vitamin A supplements, iron fortification, and biofortification. Supplementation was the number 1 investment that could be made. Fortification was the number 3 most productive investment that could be made, and biofortification was the 5th most productive investment that could be made. So biofortification means is that we start in rural areas. We start with the smallholder farmers who grow part, who eat part of what they grow. As they produce surpluses of biofortified crops and make their way into the marketing system and they reach into urban areas. Fortification, fortified foods primarily start in urban areas where people are buying their food as the economy develops and fortified foods make their way into rural areas. So we feel that biofortification and fortification are highly complementary strategies. We need every type of intervention that we can to fight this problem of mineral and vitamin deficiency. Biofortification is not a silver bullet, but it is a cost-effective approach that we feel needs to be expanded in developing countries. I'll talk a little bit about a program, a project that we implemented in Mozambique and Uganda to show that biofortification can be effective when it's implemented in a real-world situation. So we targeted 24,000 households in Uganda and Mozambique. These were white sweet potato-growing households. And we did extension with these 24,000 households and made the case with the mothers, with the fathers, that if they would adopt and grow orange sweet potatoes, substituting 1-for-1 the orange sweet potato for the white sweet potato, that they could protect their families from vitamin A deficiency. Well, we found that about 75% or 80% of the households adopted the orange sweet potato. They didn't completely convert all of their land from orange to white. Maybe they converted about 50% of their land to the production of the orange sweet potato, and they consumed the orange sweet potato in their home. This graph that's showing on the screen, the dark orange is the vitamin A intake in the villages where we did not intervene, where the households continued to grow just the white sweet potato. Those are the total vitamin A intake. We had intervention villages, we had control villages. The dark orange was in the control villages. In the intervention villages, where they converted part of their land, part of their sweet potato land to orange, vitamin A intakes were increased by the amount of the light orange bars on top of the dark orange bars. So they increased their vitamin A intake by from 75% to 100%. And in Uganda, we took blood samples and we measured an improvement in the serum retinol of the children in the intervention doses as compared with the control doses. So this was our first evidence that in a real-world situation, that the introduction of biofortified drops could be effective in improving vitamin A status. So that concludes my brief summary of Harvest Plus, the biofortification, the progress that we've made. And I'm now going to turn it over to my colleague, Anna-Marie Ball, who's been very involved in the implementation on the ground in Africa. So talk about your experiences out there.
We've got quite a few observations, so this is by no means an exhaustive comment on things that we've learned. And you will find that I will draw my examples particularly about the sweet potato. I'm obviously a great fan of the sweet potato, but also about the high iron beans. When I was in Uganda, this is a community. The first person that arrived in the Sudan. And this first message to the farmers is actually an interesting message. So he was introduced to sweet potato as the vitamin A sweet potato, and the beans as rich in iron, and we need iron to build strong blood. So as an agronomist, he needs to talk about nutrition at a very basic level. Otherwise, why would a farmer even bother to plant a differently colored sweet potato, an orange one, when in fact they are used to white or pink colored ones? So we want to use the reason right from the beginning. So we're here with varieties that are better for your health than the ones that you are currently growing. So the message that our partners receive is that what we're doing is nutrition to agriculture, but we will, in fact, address both the agriculture and the nutrition. As we go into communities and we talk to farmers and we do a fair amount of research, we find that extension is considered to be a preferred and trusted source of information for farmers. So, and this actually tends to be a primary source for many people if there are extension workers around. But from our experience, from my experience of 10 years working with the public and private extension services, my observation is that in fact, while the extension workers can do the agronomy, they rarely talk about nutrition. So one of the things that we would do is to cross-train so that extension workers can speak about nutrition at a basic level, that they know that the crops that they are bringing in are being brought in for the micronutrients that is present there. And that is bearing in mind, of course, that we're not interested in sacrificing our yield. In fact, the varieties must match up in terms of yield to the varieties that people are currently growing and have a disease and pest resistance as well. So the cost to the varieties will be on the nutrition. And the extension workers have to know this. So that they can give this information to the farmers that they're working with. The other question that we talk about is who are we targeting when we're working with farmers? Are we looking at women because they are feeding their families? Are we targeting men because they're often seen to be the farmers? And our experience is, of course, that it's better to target households. So Tara here does feed her family, but she's also a family farmer. Julie is probably more interested in the agronomic messages and the marketing messages, but in fact, it's also in his best interest to get some of the nutrition messages. And the reason for that is obviously, as someone who controls family resources, land and cash, he also needs to know that his children will be healthy with his stock, and that obviously is going to affect his pocket, because if he doesn't have to take his children to the clinic, he's not putting out money for that particular thing. So we want to provide the nutrition and the agronomic messages to both men and women in a household, because it's the household that benefits. Now, particularly in Uganda, we do see that linking nutrition to good growth and performance in school is actually really a poignant message, because education is so highly valued that when you are able to make that message to people, they can actually, they do get it. Now, another one of our interests in our discussion is, how do we get the biofortified crops out in the most cost-effective way? And we currently have some interesting research going on in Uganda that looks at the diffusion from farmer to farmer. How do farmers do it? Who do they share with? And the question that we're asking is, how much saturation in the community do we need to have for the biofortified crop to be entered? So that if there was a drought, if there was a flood, would there be enough food within the community for it to be used to the natural bear? Now, both in Uganda and Mozambique, played around a little bit with the idea of payback or pay forward, where farmers are actively encouraged to share food, of course, with the vegetative and propagated crops, such as the sweet potato, and also with cassava, which works very well because the food is kept in the garden and you can easily share. Also with beans, because they're not hybrid, they are also easily shared. So in this slide, what you see is Martha, who is a new farmer in her farmer's group. She's working with the farmers. They pool their food together with the intention that they will actually share with another farmer's group. But we know, and we are tracking, in fact, farmers who share their food with relatives and friends, and calculating how cost-effective this is in actually entering the food within communities. Those of you that work in agriculture know that quite possibly the first question that a farmer will ask you when you bring in a new variety is, can I sell this? And we are convinced, of course, that addressing markets is key to long-term sustainability. Crops may stay in the family garden for the nutrition, but we know that crops will stay in the garden being maintained there if a farmer can sell the crop. And so we love to engage markets from the beginning. Recently we had some radio work And my surveys going out asking farmers, do you think that the farmers should sell their crop or just keep it at home? And it won't surprise any of you that farmers say, at least the person should sell some of their crop, because that will allow them to deal with some of the issues in their household. But they don't want the farmers, they don't encourage their fellow farmers to sell everything. So that's for those of us working in biofuels producing and with these crops, where you want to make an impact on farming health, that's actually a really good thing. So people are consuming these crops, but they're also taking an opportunity to sell. In all of our countries that we're working in Africa, we have engaged the mass media to create demand. And that ranges from a radio news drama in Uganda with 30 episodes, with a story of intrigue by a lady who has to own sweet potato and a husband that wants to sell off the land and children that need some good nutrition. How does she manage? We've also worked with Nollywood to produce some films about the young cassava, over the young cassava. And in Rwanda, we've engaged popular singers who have put out a music video. You can go to YouTube and listen to it when you're offline. And then the singers went around the country doing road shows. And this creates tremendous demand for the crop. And it's a great thing. The caveat to this is, if you do not have the food systems in place, if you don't have the source of food sorted out before you create the demand, you will find yourself in hot water. Because people are very enthusiastic. I am constantly amazed by how farmers are so willing to try a new variety. So if you create the demand, make sure that you have the food system in place. You've got the food there. You can direct the farmers to where they can find the food because they are going to want to buy it, and that's exactly what you want. So the preparation is definitely needed. The last point that I'll make, and then I'll hand it over to Hattie, is to say that farmers never ever produce and consume within a vacuum. They, political vacuum, they need the support of policymakers who know and understand the issues. And so in each country, the country teams have engaged with policymakers to make sure that biofortification is on the agenda, on the national agenda, worked into the plans for agriculture, nutrition, for education. What we are seeing right now, an example is that the government of Uganda is actually taking up the biofortified crops in a World Bank project that will involve health, agriculture, and education. And they'll introduce at least two of the biofortified crops.
Okay, I'll finish up by talking about where we're headed next with Harvest Plus. Just continuing on the slide that we're on now, the Minister of Agriculture of Bangladesh endorsed biofortification at the International Conference, the International Conference on Nutrition, which was held at FAO last year. The other three slides are from our second local conference on biofortification, which Harvest Plus sponsored about a year ago in Kigali. Up in the upper right is Akin Abishide, the Minister of Agriculture of Nigeria, who has endorsed biofortification. The lower left hand is the Minister of Health from Rwanda, who also was endorsing biofortification. And in the lower right-hand corner is Rachel Pike, Vice President of the World Bank, whose comment at the conference was, now we kind of switched. Before, people were asking, should we do biofortification? Is it the right thing to do now? With the evidence that we have, the question now for policymakers is, if you're not implementing biofortification, why aren't you implementing biofortification? So what's the road ahead? I pointed out our 8-party countries, 9-party countries that we had in Ethiopia, but there's so many other countries where we want to start the implementation of biofortification. So there are so many different types of institutions that we want them to embrace biofortification. And mainstream use for biofortified crops within their day-to-day activities. So the primary actor that we want to get engaged are our private sector entities. So with the especially with the hybrid crops, the maize, the hybrid, the corn, and India hybrid, we want food companies to develop their own biofortified varieties and to be involved in the marketing of biofortified seeds. We've done that with the Nirmal Seed Company in India, with the Pearl Millet. Other companies are now getting involved. We've done that with three seed companies in Zambia, with the Orange Maize, the three major actors. Those three companies in Zambia next year will be producing Orange Maize biofortified seeds, which will constitute 5% of the commercial market in Zambia. So we're making very good inroads there with private seed companies. At the same time, the public agricultural research community needs to mainstream biofortification. We can't have some one stream of high yielding crops coming out that are drought resistant, climate smart, and another stream of the biofortified crops that don't have these agronomic properties. We have to combine the two. The climate smart crops have to also be biofortified, so we have to get the public agricultural research institute to mainstream biofortification, and we're working very hard on that. First within our centers, the CGIR centers, and then also within National Agricultural Research Institute. In addition, we're working with international NGOs. We've signed an MOU with World Vision. They have agricultural programs in 90 countries around the world. They want to integrate their agricultural programs with their health programs, and they see biofortified crops as a perfect way to do that. So we're working with them in countries where we're releasing crops, but we don't have programs. We're working with World Vision to develop the funding, to develop the technical expertise so that World Vision can take the lead in introducing biofortified crops in those countries, which we call partnership countries. Multilateral institutions, the World Food Program has a purchase for progress where they're helping program where they're helping farmers develop their productivity, and then they buy their produce and store. They buy locally and store in World Food Program warehouses. Well, it's a simple step to substitute a biofortified crop for the regular crop. So in Rwanda, they're substituting high iron beans for regular beans in the physical progress program, and they've now purchased 77 tons of biofortified high iron beans to store in their warehouses. The World Bank has recently announced a grant to the Ugandan government, which is a $27 million grant. And one of the key components is the dissemination, the scaling up of orange sweet potato and high iron beans. These are exactly the types of programs that we want the NGOs, the multilateral programs, to become engaged in. We want to spin this off to these institutions. We just talked in the previous slide about the advocacy and the support by national governments and regional organizations. We're engaged with CADAP in Africa. I was just that Anna Marie and I were just at the African Union 2 weeks ago, and a press release came out by the Commissioner for Rural Economy and Agriculture endorsing the biofortification strategy. We need to create consumer demand. That's the ultimate sustainability of biofortification, is consumers demand the biofortified crops. And we talked about our using the media. The private sector marketing, we're talking to food processing companies, millers, We use biofortified crops. We're developing new products that involve the use of biofortified crops for the process. This saves demand. The farmers are able to sell the biofortified crops in the market. This is something that the farmers want to do. They need to sell part of what they produce. And then, of course, we're generating evidence across the world, documenting what the reach of biofortified crops is, what the public health benefit is, what works in the dissemination of crops, what doesn't work, what's most cost effective. And then Harvest Plus is collecting this evidence, and then sharing it with others so that they can implement the biofortification strategy. So, in a nutshell, that's what Harvest Plus is working on, looking forward, the road ahead for Harvest Plus. So that ends our formal remarks, and we're very happy to take questions now. And thank you again for taking the time to participate in this session with us.
Great, thank you so much. Sounds like a lot has been done, and a lot more is in the pipeline to happen. It's really exciting. We have a broad array of participants right now in the webinar who have been asking quite a few questions throughout. We're going to go ahead and start with some of the more challenging questions. But really, what is the progress on amino acid fortified varieties in crops?
The first biofortification program in our system actually started back in the 1970s. The name of the program was what they called quality protein maize, high lysine maize, TPM is the acronym. Back in the 1970s, the nutrition community identified protein as a public health problem. Quality protein is a public health problem. They identified a maize that was high in lysine, but it was low yielding. It had terrible consumer characteristics. Well, the breeding program was started at our center in Mexico, the National Center for Maize and Wheat Improvement. They started developing TPM. They had difficulty getting the high lysine and high yielding background. But over a number of years, they did manage to get them into high-yielding backgrounds. A problem is that there was basically a short time frame during which the international nutrition community identified protein. They basically came out and said, in the late 1970s, we made a mistake. It's not a limited public health problem. But the breeding program continues. And there are varieties that are available that are high yielding. But let me contrast the difference between what Harvest Plus is doing and what happened with the quality protein maize program. I don't want to put down the quality protein maize. But we started from the beginning. We knew that the nutrition community identified vitamin A, iron, and zinc, as well as iodine, as major public health problems. We started with that. We quickly determined that we could not address the iodine problem through plant breeding, but we could vitamin A, iron, and zinc. Iodine is well addressed through salt fortification. Then we, as I've already emphasized, we bred them in high-yielding backgrounds. It wasn't really as difficult to breed high minerals and vitamins in high-yielding backgrounds as it was the quality protein maize. Then we did the efficacy trials. It was very important for us to generate the evidence on the efficacy trials and give that evidence, show that evidence to the nutrition community so that they would support the biofortification strategy. To the best of my knowledge, I don't believe that there have been efficacy trials done in human studies that have been published in major human nutrition journals. And now, with the dissemination of the biofortified crops, the vitamin A, the iron, and the zinc, we are raising the resources, developing the strategies to have programs in our target countries to get those varieties out. There are small amounts of funding and there is some consideration in getting the CPMs out, but I don't think there's a major program and major backing for the dissemination of those costs. So we do, as we travel around the African countries, I just visited South African countries on a 2-week trip. And each country that we went to, we were asked about CPM. And I tell that story, and, it's not part of our discussion. It may be a very good intervention. We wish